Okay, so let's begin. I hope everyone has a Chumash in front of you. I will give this presentation. I'll give this presentation both assuming you have the text in front of you, and we'll offer whatever comments as we go as well, assuming that you may not have the text. So first of all, a happy Rosh Chodesh to everyone. Tonight is Rosh Chodesh, and for those of you Americans, a happy Thanksgiving, and for those of you Canadians, a happy Thursday, because it's not our Thanksgiving. I want to do the following with the parsha. I want to look at three different things. The first thing is, what was Yitzchak thinking when he decided to give Esav the bracha? That's number one. What in the world was he thinking? Number two, I want to look at what is the story of the sale of the birthright at the beginning with Yaakov and Esav. And the third is Yitzchak's nature in general in the whole picture of the Torah. So let's go to the first one, because I think that's really the heart of the story. So in this week's parsha, we have Yitzchak gives the bracha apparently to Esav. We know the story. Yitzchak gets married. He and Rivka don't have children. Yitzchak prays for children on behalf of Rivka. They have two children, Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov is described as being a ish Yoshev Olim, which means a man of the tent, which either means he's a shepherd who has to take his tent around to different places. As he shepherds the sheep, you got to take them somewhere, and you got to sleep somewhere, so he's a person of the tent. Or, like the Medrash says, the tent of the Torah, he's a person of ideas, of thought, of Torah. Esav is described as being a hunter. So that's the introduction. Very little happens in Yitzchak's life, and before you know it, he's giving a blessing to Yaakov and Esav. Presumably, this is the end of his life. He's towards the end of his life. He's lost his sight, and he wants to give the blessing to them. What was he thinking about in wanting to give the bracha to Esav? It would seem it bothered Rivka too much. Richard wants to say, based on his reaction, he didn't know that Esav was unworthy. I'm not going to assume that. I'm not going to assume that. I'm going to assume something different. Rivka clearly thought it was the wrong thing. What's the story? Yeah, it says Yitzchak, his eyes are dim. He can't see so well. He calls in Esav and says, go out and get me some food. Bring it back, and I will give you a blessing. Esav goes out. While he's out, Rivka says, this cannot be. He can't be the guy to get the bracha. Yaakov's got to get the bracha. Right? Yaakov doesn't want to do it so much, but he goes along with it. Gets the bracha. Esav comes back. Yitzchak says, uh-oh, I gave someone the bracha. If it wasn't you, who was it? It must have been your brother. And he goes ahead, and Esav convinces him to give another one. What was he thinking? So here's what I want to offer. The entire Torah is the story of, what I would say is the story of the promise that the Jewish people are going to get the land of Israel. Avram is told, you're going to get the land of Israel. Yitzchak is told also, you're going to get the land of Israel. They're not thinking just about their children. They're thinking about Jewish history. What is Jewish history going to be? It's going to be inheriting the land of Israel, becoming the rulers of the land of Israel. That is the story of the Torah. So when Yitzchak is going to give the bracha, what does he have in mind? I want to give it to one of the children, not the other of the children. What's he thinking? So let me offer what I think, and then I'll come back to some of the comments. I know everyone wants to know whether or not Yitzchak was aware of the fact that Rivka knew that only one of them would be part of the Jewish people. My assumption is that Yitzchak thinks both of them are going to be part of the Jewish people. So let me explain. So let's say you have today. Let's say you have the Jewish people are going to rule the land of Israel. And you have in front of you Tzipi Livni, and you have Michael Melchior, and you have Barak. And so you say, okay, now who's going to be the Minister of Education? Who's going to be the Minister of Foreign Affairs? Who's going to be the Minister of Defense? So you're not going to make Rabbi Melchior the Minister of Defense. You're going to make him the Minister of Education. You're not going to get Barak to be the Minister of Religion, or Religious Affairs. It's not his field. His field is defense. He is going to be the defense leader. He's going to be the leader of defense. Yitzchak says to himself, okay, let's see where we are. I am the Jewish people. Who's going to be the next Jewish people? My children. Now, who do I got? So I got Yaakov. He can be a religious leader. He can be a spiritual leader. And I have Esav. He's a fine hunter. But what's going to be with the next generation? When they become the rulers of the Jewish people, what's Esav's role going to be? What do I have to do with him? So instead of asking, why did he give the bracha to Esav? What bracha did he give to Esav? What is the bracha that he gives to him? So if we take a look at the bracha, which is, I have the Yard Scroll here, Chumash, page 138, it's chapter Chav Zion, 27, verse 28, Chavchet. So what's the bracha he gives him? Yaakov comes in pretending to be Esav, so what is it that Yitzchak gives him? So he tells him basically three things. The bracha is, V'yiten lecha hu Elokim, mitala shamayim mishmanei ha'aretz v'rav dagon v'tirash. May Hashem give you from the dew of the heavens, from the fat of the earth, much grain and wine. That's one. Yavducha amim v'yishtachavu lecha lumim. Havigvir li'achecha v'yishtachavu lecha b'nei mecha. Nations will serve you. Nations will bow down to you. You will be have strength and dominance over your brothers. The children of your mother will bow to you. What was he given? The first part is, Hashem should give you the dew of the heavens and the fat of the earth. What is the nature of that bracha? If you were a miner and you mined gold, so what would be the blessing to you as a miner of gold? That you should have good rainfall? Rainfall is insignificant. It's not important. I don't want rainfall. I'm a miner. I want sharp tools. I want a land that has good minerals. I don't want rain. Esav's a hunter. God should give you the dew of the heavens and the fat of the earth. That's not a hunter's bracha. The hunter's bracha should be, you should be a good aim. You should be a good shot. What is the bracha that he's giving him? You should have abundance of grain and wine. So the bracha that Yitzchak is giving him is, listen, we're the Jewish people. We're going to rule this land. It says we're going to get this land. What does that mean to get the land? We're going to rule it. We're going to be in charge of its economy. We're going to be in charge of its defense. We're going to be in charge of its relationships with the nations surrounding us. That's what we are. We've got to move to the next generation. We've got to get into the modern world. We have to take over this land and rule the land. So we need two things: economic well-being and power. We need to have. You cannot be the Jewish people as shepherds. This is a theme that comes up in the Torah in a few places. The Jewish people cannot continue to be shepherds. Avram was a shepherd. Yitzchak, it doesn't tell you really what he does, but you assume he's a shepherd. Yaakov, you know for sure, is a shepherd. You cannot have an economy based on shepherding. You have to have an economy based on agriculture. You got to move from being a shepherd to being a farmer. We've got to become farmers. This theme comes up again later on with Yosef, too. When Yosef has his dreams with Yaakov and his brothers, what's the family business? They're shepherds. The brothers take the sheep up to Shechem. What's Yosef's dream? Grain will bow down to me. Grain? Who's got grain? We're not farmers. What kind of dream is that? The grain will bow down to me. Then he has another one. The sun and the moon, the stars, will bow down to me. The Yosef's dreams are agriculture and power. He says, I see in my dreams that we are going to be farmers in the land and we are going to be powerful in the land. The next generation, we are the ones in which the promise that we will be rule the land is going to happen in our time. Yosef says it's going to be agriculture and it's going to be power. That's exactly what Yitzchak is saying to Esav. Mr. Esav, like it or not, you're part of the Jewish people in Yitzchak's mind. Now, what's your strength? How can you become a productive member of the Jewish people? You've got great skill in you're skillful as a hunter. You're a man of physical prowess. So I'm not going to give you the portfolio of foreign affairs. That's not going to be your portfolio. I'm not going to give the portfolio of education. I'm not going to give you a portfolio of religious affairs. That's Yaakov, clearly. But Esav, what you can be is, you can be a powerful economic force in the new Jewish dominion, which is going to be in a land. May God give you the dew of the heavens, which is an agricultural blessing. Mishmani Aretz, agriculture. Rov Dagon V'Tirosh, a lot of grain and wine. You should be the agricultural leader. Number two, you will also be, what is Yavducha Amim Vishtachavu Lecha Lumim? Nations will serve you. Nations will bow to you. The language is power. You are going to be the face, the military face to the nations around us. You are going to be a person of power and dominion to the nations around us. You're also going to be the police force. Gevir li'achecha, v'shtachavu l'cha b'nei mecha. You're going to be the powerful force amongst your people as well. That's my assumption, is that Yitzchak thinks all his children are part of the Jewish people. And why shouldn't he? Now, you'll tell me that Rivka got the news earlier on that was not going to be the case. Okay. But at this point, I think the simple meaning of the Torah is that Yitzchak feels all of my children are going to be part of the Jewish people. We must make the transition from shepherding and from hunters to farmers and to wielders of power. And Esav, you're the man for that. Now, Yaakov clearly is going to be a part of the Jewish people as well. He's got the spiritual things. So that's my assumption. It's interesting also, you know, if we want to put this in a context as well, the issue, part of the greatness of Jewish history was that there was not a division made between the spiritual leaders and the religious leaders. David HaMelech Gemara says, what does David HaMelech do? What's King David doing with his time? So he writes beautiful poetry. And the Gemara says, the people would come into him early in the morning and say, your people need parnassa. The economy is not good. We need to have some kind of an effort to help the economy of the people. That's what a king does. A king deals with the economy, with agriculture, whatever is the economy. And he deals with, so the same person was the poet, the religious figure, the king, and the economic and military leader. I don't know today, by the way, if we'd want that. You know, if, for example, the religious parties in Israel, if the Shas and what was the National Religious Party and Agud and everyone got together and made one big religious party, they could easily win the election. I don't know if that'd be a good thing. I don't know if we know today how to be both religious leaders and political leaders, if we have the savvy to do that exactly, or we have the patience or the ability to hold back on some of the things we do. But anyway, I'm not sure if it would work. Yitzchak also feels it's not going to necessarily work. I don't want the same person to be the religious leader as to be the agricultural leader and the warrior. I want two different people. I want Yaakov and I want Esav. I get both of them. I think that's the approach. Now, the question as to whether or not Yitzchak knew what Rivka heard at the beginning, I believe the Ramban says he was not aware of that. But I'm not sure that you have to necessarily interpret what she was told in a definitive way. Maybe you could interpret what she was told to be Shnei goyim bevignev, Shnei lumim imarfi paredu, two nations in your womb, two nations will separate. I don't know if maybe it doesn't mean two nations. Maybe it means maybe she didn't know what it meant either. Maybe it meant two powers within the same people. I don't know. But clearly, according to what I'm offering, Yitzhak was not aware of that. He thought his entire family would be the Jewish people, and he had no reason in particular to think otherwise. And that's why he was giving Esav that bracha. Not to the exclusion of Yaakov, but to include both of them. Now, there's some questions here. How can a man as great as Yitzhak not know his son, his own son? This is a man who was chosen by God to be placed on an altar. Okay. So let me address that. Let me do it now. The entire story of the giving of the bracha is introduced with one line. If you want to look, it's right at the beginning of chapter Chav Zion 27. It says, "V'hi ki zaken Yitzchak etchene enav meraos, v'krav es Esav beno gadol." It says Yitzchak was elderly; his eyes were dimmed from seeing, and he called to his older son, and he said to him, "I want you to go out, and I don't know the day of my death. Take your equipment and go out and hunt for me and bring me back some food, and I'll give you a blessing." Sometimes in Tanakh, I saw this week, I don't recall who I saw it from. In Tanakh, when you're telling a story, you can either foreshadow something or you can leave the information till the moment you need it. For example, if this story was told in the following way, Yitzchak called in Esav, said to him, "Esav, I want to give you a blessing, but I want you to go out and hunt for me and bring you some good food." Esav went out to hunt. And as he went out to hunt, Rivka says, "Uh-oh, the wrong person is going to get the blessing." And since Yitzchak is not so good at seeing, we can pull the wool over his eyes because his eyes aren't so good to begin with. So, in other words, where do you put the information that makes the story make sense? Why does the story begin with the statement, Yitzhak didn't see so good. It shouldn't start with that. It should leave that information to stick in right when Yaakov goes to trick him. Yaakov is only going to be able to trick him because he doesn't see so well. Why is that right at the beginning? So the Medrash picks up on that and clearly says his lack of vision was not physical vision, but rather was perception. And the Medrash, Rashi quotes it, has a couple of explanations. One is that when Yitzhak was bound on the Akedah, it says he was bound on the altar, his father was about to kill him, and it says the tears of the Malachi Asharis, of the angels, dripped down into his eyes and blinded him. That's one version. That's one statement in the Medrash. The other in the Medrash says that Yitzchak, when he was bound on the altar, looked up into the heavens and saw the Shemaim, saw the heavens, and when he saw the heavens, he was blinded. So what's the meaning of that? The meaning of both of those. So what I would offer is that a person, you have the survivor mentality. A person who saw death and survived it, so how does that affect the person? So we see in our own times, sometimes survivors become universalists. Someone told me just this week that they were in a class at Boston University with Elie Wiesel. And when the issues were going on in Bosnia, Elie Wiesel was asked to go, I think by NATO, to go to Bosnia as a figure of moral greatness. And his picture appeared in the New York Times the next day, on Sunday, in the Sunday Times, with Elie Wiesel on a Hummer going in Bosnia with a helmet on Shabbos. So when he came to the class the next week, he said to them, I don't normally drive on Shabbos, but I felt this was pikuach nefesh. This was, lives were in danger, and what I could do with my moral suasion maybe could save lives, which I think he's probably right about that. His involvement could possibly be a moral force. But Elie Wiesel, as a result of his experience, didn't lose his Jewishness. He became very much of a universalist, universal man, one who cares for all people. So what's the nature of the blindness of Yitzhak at the Akedah? What's the nature of that blindness? What happened to him? Well, how did he change? It says he became blinded. How did he change? So it could be that he became a lover of humanity. He became a person who was not prompted by division, but was prompted by inclusion. Since I have seen the moment of death, I want to love all people. I want to bring everyone in. And maybe that's what it means. Maybe the tears of the angels coming into his eyes caused him to have a different view of the world. Not less Jewish, but more inclusive. An inclusive view of the world. There's a fascinating website, which someone sent me something from this website, called TED, I think it's TED.org or TED.com, Technology, Education, something, I don't know. Someone convenes these conferences in California every couple of years, and the people who are on the cutting edge of interesting ideas in the world come together and they give 20-minute, 30-minute presentations, and they put the presentations online. So there's a whole bunch of different presentations. Al Gore was there a couple of years ago to talk about global warming. They had, when they came out with touchscreen computer screens, they was there. So there's a woman who gives a presentation on this site that is just fascinating. So the woman says she is a brain researcher. Her brother is schizophrenic, and she always had an interest in brain research. So she became a brain researcher in a lab with a Harvard psychiatrist in Boston and studying the brain. And when she was 38 years old, she woke up one day and she was having a brain hemorrhage. She had a bleed in the brain. She started to lose her balance, her speech, and she said, "This is unbelievable. I'm a researcher of the brain and I'm having a brain hemorrhage." So she clued into what was happening to her, and she describes what was happening in her brain. So she describes that you have two parts of your brain, the left and the right. And she actually has a brain that she shows you. It's a little gross, but anyway, she has a brain that she shows you in the two lobes. The one side of the brain is the universal, the indistinguished part of the brain. You feel part of humanity. You feel part of the world. You feel like you're at one with humanity. The other part of the brain is your particular experience, what you need to do today, your jobs, your feeling of your identity. So she describes when she was having this hemorrhage that she went between feelings of being one with humanity and so expansive. She said, "How can I get back in my body? I'm so expansive." And then she had moments in which she felt, "Oh, I have to make this phone call and tell someone I'm having a problem here." So it's fascinating that we do have this feeling, the uniqueness of our individuality and our sense of being one of humanity, a part of a great human race. So maybe that was the effect of the angel's tears in Yitzhak's eyes. What it meant was, I am blind to the weak. I know there's weaknesses. I know Esav is a, you know, bull in a china shop. I know that. But he's part of the Jewish people, and I am not going to turn my back on him. He is going to be a part and a productive part, and we can make him productive. We can make him a part of it. That maybe that's what the Medrash means. Or the other possibility, when it says he looked into the heavens, he was blinded by a vision of the heavens. What does that mean? So this is a different theme which I believe goes throughout the Parsha. Yitzchak sees a spiritual universe and becomes kind of like a expression, Luftmensch. He becomes he's a spiritual man. He's a man of prayer. He's a man of looking at the soul of a thing. He's not a man of this world. He's not a person who's going to make a plan. He's going to go through the land, lobbying for the Jewish people as Avraham did. Yitzchak is a different person. Let me just focus on that for 1 second. I think in the image, who is Yitzchak in the Torah? In the past, I had this sense that Yitzchak was the man of continuity. It's almost like the passed over generation. You have Avraham, and then you have Yaakov and all his sons, and they're the Jewish people. And what's Yitzchak? I don't know. Let's just get through that generation. Let's, you know, somehow get through it. Not much happens to him. And so what is he? What does he do? But Yitzchak really is distinguished by being a spiritual man. It's interesting that, what are the events in his life? He's bound on the Akedah, on the altar. It says he marries. He prays for his wife. Did Avraham ever pray for Sarah to have a child? Do we ever have Avraham praying for Sarah? You don't have that. You have Avraham complaining that Sarah doesn't have a child, but he doesn't pray for her. Yitzchak does. Yitzchak, it says, goes out lasuach basadeh. To either means to walk in the field or to pray. Avram has requests of Hashem, but they're always very specific. Sodom is going to be destroyed. I will negotiate on behalf of Sodom. That's definitely a divine engagement, but it's not the same as going out in the field and meditating. Yitzchak is, and what's the other event that you have that's a little bit bewildering? It says that Yitzchak went through the land, and he dug the wells that Avram had dug, and he gave them all names. What does that mean? What's digging the wells? So I think that you can say, in a poetic sense, that deep in the ground is deep in spirit. In other words, you have that in Tanakh. You have sometimes the imagery of a person going down physically means he's going down spiritually. What's the paradigm of that? Yonah. What happens? Yonah is told to go to the great city of Nineveh. Go and tell the city of Nineveh you're going to be destroyed. He doesn't want to do it. So what does he do? He goes down to Yafo. You can't get any lower than sea level. What does he do? He goes down into the bottom of the boat. You can't get any lower than the bottom of the boat unless you're thrown overboard. He's thrown overboard, he goes down farther. Obviously, Yonah is going down physically because he's falling spiritually. When it says that Yitzchak digs the wells, it means he's going deep as opposed to broad. Yitzchak is the person of deep spiritual nature. He also gives his sons a bracha. Did Avram ever give his sons a bracha? He never did that. Yaakov does later on because he saw what Yitzchak did. Yitzchak is the spiritual man. He's the man of prayer. He's the man of meditating in the field. He's the digger of deep wells. In fact, when he makes the pact with Avimelech, many of the modern literary commentators point out you should always watch for stories that are parallel, for what the parallel tells you, and for what the differences tell you as well. So, Avram made a pact with Avimelech. When he made a pact with Avimelech, what did Avimelech say to him? I want to make a pact with you because I see Elokim Imcha B'chol Asher Ata Oseh. God is with you with everything that you do. When Yitzhak makes a pact with Avimelech, what does Avimelech say to him? Ki Hashem Imcha. God is with you. It's not the word Elohim, it's the word Hashem, and it's not God's with you in everything you do, but God is with you. You are a man of God. Avram, you're blessed by God. Yitzchak, you are with him. You're a man, God is with you like a relationship. So that's the view. So I think that's what the Medrash means as well. The Medrash says, Yitzchak became blinded by the vision of the heavens. He gazed up into the heavens, and he saw the heavens. What does that mean? He became a spiritual man. Became a man of spirit. And that's his role. So in the Torah you have, Avraham is like a friendly, slap on the back, a person of the people. He's well liked. You see that in Ephron, you see it in Avimelech, you see it in other people. He's a person that people like. He interacts with people. He has fame, he has fortune, he's engaged. Yitzchak is deep. He's the post-Holocaust generation. He's deep, and he's affected to become a spiritual man. I think that's Yitzchak. And I think that's what you could say blinds him in the story that comes afterwards. He's not willing to write off Esav. He's not willing to do that. It's not that he doesn't see what type of person Esav is, but he says, good, he's a bull. He's a bull in a china shop. Good, fine. But that doesn't mean that's all he is. He could have greatness within him. I see the spiritual things in life. I'm not bothered by the hunter. I think that he has a soul. He's a good man. That's the approach that I would take. And I think that's what he's trying to teach us, is to look at that. I want to look at one more story and offer maybe a different explanation of that as well. And then maybe we'll come back to some other aspects. What's the deal with the story right at the beginning? It says that two boys are born, Yaakov and Esav. It says Esav is the hunter, Yaakov is the dweller of tents. Yitzchak loves Esav because he has hunting game in his mouth. Rivka loves Yaakov. Then it goes right into the story of the pottage or the lentil soup. So what's the story? So without looking at Psukim, and you can answer this question, it's not rhetorical. Yaakov made a pot of soup, and Esav came from the field, and Esav said to Yaakov, give me some of this soup. I left out two parts. Because I am what? Give me some of the soup because I am. What should the answer be? Yaakov, give me some of the soup because I am. Anyone? I'm going to die. He should say, because I'm hungry. Give me some of the soup because I'm hungry. What do you mean, because I'm tired? I'm too tired to make the food? It says it twice. It says, Yaakov was making food, Esav came from the field, and he was tired. And Esav said to Yaakov, give me, please, some of this food, because I'm tired. So Yaakov said to him, sell me your birthright. Esav says, I'm going to die. What do I need the birthright for? What do you mean, going to die of what? He's so tired he's going to die? You know, I'm so hungry I'm going to die? What do you mean he's going to die? He really thinks he's going to die? So the Medrash comments here that why was Yaakov making lentil soup? Because, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it says, when you come back from the cemetery, you're supposed to have lentils. The Ramah says, we Ashkenazi have hard-boiled egg. Okay, but the Shulchan Aruch says, you have lentils when you come back from the cemetery. So the Medrash comments here, why was Yaakov making lentil soup? Because this was the day of the death of Abraham. So I want to offer the following. When Esav came back from the field, he was tired. Tired of what? So Esav said to Yaakov, Yaakov, I don't get it. Avram's the most righteous of all people. Our grandfather. He was, you know, such a wonderful man. He died. We're all going to die. What's the use of this whole world anyway? If a man like Avram can die, and he's so pious, and he's so beloved, so much merit, how could he die? That's it? His life's over? What's the use? What's the use of anything in life? We're all just going to die. He said, give me some of that soup of mourning, because that's how I feel. I feel tired of this life. There's just nothing to it, and I'm tired. I'm just tired of it. Yaakov said, you're really tired of life? There's nothing to this life? We're the Jewish people. We have greatness in us. Of course there's death in the world. But while you're here, you got to do something with this life. You got to make it holy. You got to do things. You have to create. You have to, you know, we have a job to do in this world. It's not nothing. He said, are you serious that you really think life is meaningless? Because if you think life is meaningless, what's the use of being Jewish to you? Being Jewish means nothing to you. It's only going to be burdens, it's not going to be joy. So put your money where your mouth is. If you really think this world is tiring and you're tired of life, then sell me the birthright. Tell me, because you should not be part of the Jewish people if you don't believe in this mission. So he says, we're going to die. What do I need it for? It's all meaningless. So Yaakov said, okay, so swear to me that that's how you feel. And then Esav despised the Bechor. I think this is, I wouldn't say this is shot. This is not the simple meaning of what the story means. But I think that's the confrontation. I think Yaakov is trying to goad Esav as to what he really means. What are you tired of? You're not just tired of hunting. That's not the issue. What are you tired of? You're tired of life. If you're tired of life, and you think life is, just to digress a little bit, I personally think this is the primary question of all of Judaism. The primary question is, does life mean anything or not? Does it really matter if I eat, drink, and be merry, as opposed to doing kindness and goodness and spiritual pursuits? Does it really make any difference at all? Because if it makes no difference at all, then I may as well eat, drink, and be merry than extend myself for things which I think are meaningful, because they're not. But if I do think life is meaningful, I do think I'm here for a purpose, that there is a God, there's a purpose to my life, then I'll act differently. So I want to read into this story that that's their confrontation. And that's the reason why Esav really can't be part of the Jewish people. Because he's written out, if you don't buy in to the basic notion of meaning in life, then you really can't, if you think lentil soup is more important than life, then you really can't be a part of the Jewish people. And I think that's what happens afterwards. That's why he's out. Okay, so let's go back to this other thing about Rivka. I just want to wrap up one more thought, and then I know, so some of you are bothered by the fact that, colored by the fact that if Rivka knew from the beginning of the Parsha that there's only going to be one part of the Jewish, one of these two children is going to be part of the Jewish people, why didn't she tell you, you taught that? She should have gone to him right away and said, I can't believe what I just heard. I just heard we got two nations in the womb, only one's Jewish. I can't believe it. I thought both of them would be Jewish. Should have told him that right away. So you have an interesting image that the Torah creates at the beginning here of the strong woman and the universal man. Avraham is a universalist as well. He wants to have Yishmael be part of the Jewish people. Hashem says, no, listen to Sarah, she's right. Yitzchak wants, what does Yitzchak do when Avram dies? Who buries Avraham? Yitzchak and Yishmael. They both bury him. Where does Yitzchak live after the when the Torah describes that Yitzchak marries Rivka? So it says right at the end of last week's parsha, after Avram dies, it says, "Vayeshev Yitzchak im be'er lachai roi." Yitzchak lives in Be'er Lachai Roi. Who lives in Be'er Lachai Roi? That's where Hagar lives. That's where Yishmael lives. Yitzchak is the universalist as well. He wants Yishmael to be part of the family again. He wants Esav to be part of the family. The women are the more intuitive as to who really is in and who really needs to be out. Rivka clearly is a strong figure to counterbalance Yitzchak's universalism. She gets the prophecy. She's the one that orchestrates, rightly or wrongly, Yaakov to get the bracha. And just interesting that you don't have that with Yaakov, that the women are not so strong with Yaakov, but certainly with Avraham and with Yitzchak, the women are the ones who really chart the history of the Jewish people by insisting that it be Yitzchak and to the exclusion of Yishmael, and that it be Yaakov to the exclusion of Esau. So that's the assumption at the beginning of the Torah is that we got to make sure we get it right. When it comes to Yaakov, all of the sons are going to be part of the Jewish people, but that will only be in the time of Yaakov. Okay, those are some general thoughts. If anyone has some comments, be happy to hear them. Otherwise, I think we're going to wrap it up with that. Any comments before I give a little last summation? Okay, let me just make one last comment about Esav. I think you can also see from one other thing that Esav did think that he was going to be part of the Jewish people, and he was unaware that he was out of the Jewish people in his marriage. It says when Esav was 40 years old, he married Yehudit, who was a Chiti, and Basmat, who was a Chiti. Why did Esav marry when he was 40 years old? Because his father married when he was 40 years old. What's Esav trying to do? So the Medrash says, Esav tried to walk in his father's footsteps, but he just did the wrong things. In other words, what do we want from our children? Do we want our children to wear the same tie that we wear? Or do we want our children to have the same principles that we have? Do we care whether our children like chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream? Or do we care that our children have good values and good ethics and treat people kindly? We don't care about what they do. We care about who they are. We don't care if our children get married at the same age that we were when we got married. We just care about whether they marry someone who's a good person, who's someone that values we appreciate. So Esav focused totally on the wrong things. He got married at the same age of his father, but he married the wrong people. He tried to rectify that later on, but he married the wrong people. I think that's an image as well of maybe the Torah trying to emphasize that we're not that concerned about the externals, about the thing. Sometimes we get caught up in externals, and that's not really where we should be focusing. Esav got caught up in the externals that were just meaningless. It doesn't matter what type of shirt you wear. If you wear a white shirt or you wear a colored shirt, what's more important is, you know, what's going on, you know, with the body that's inside the shirt and how the body's acting, and not what kind of shirt you're wearing. Anyway, these are some of my thoughts on the story. I think the story of Esav, the story of Yitzchak is the man who is affected by the Akedah to be a universalist and to be a spiritual man. Those are both good lessons for us, to be able to see the good and identify the good, even if he was mistaken in identifying Esav as the man, but to identify the good in people, to try and be inclusive as opposed to exclusive, even in people whose behavior we don't like entirely, but nonetheless to be inclusive of them. And the second aspect of Yitzchak was he was not the man of breadth, he was the man of depth. He was the man who dug wells and became a spiritualist, a man who meditated in the fields, who prayed on behalf of his wife, who gave brachas to his children. He's the spiritual man, and he becomes the paradigm in Jewish history of the spiritual man. Avram's the man of kindness. Yitzchak is a man of deep spirituality, and Yaakov, we'll see later, is a man of truth and a man of the world who the Jewish people descend from. Everyone should have a happy Thanksgiving, for those of you who are having Thanksgiving. For those of the rest of us who are having Rosh Chodesh as well, we should also have a good Chodesh and a good Shabbos. Thanks to all.